Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alzader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I am fantastic. I got to spend some time down at the Muirfield Village at the memorial today, and I had a great time down there. We'll talk about more about that later. Last weekend, Aussie Stephen Bowditch may have to switch his citizenship to Texas. Both of his PGA Tour wins have come in that state. Anna Norquist got her fifth LPGA Tour win last week, but Kelly Shawn and Morgan Presser were bigger stories. Rory McIlroy missed another cut at the Irish Open. Evidently, his golfing career is over. And the memorials this week in Columbus, that means we're just 2 weeks away from the U.S. Open. Carlos, let's go!
Yes, and talking about the memorial, our VIG, one of them, is going to be Dan Sullivan, the president of H&S Sports Group and executive director of the Memorial Tournament. And we have a short interview also with Sean Foley, yes, the former teacher for Tiger Woods. So you don't want to go away. You can want to hear everything that we have for you. But as usual, we're going to start with our weekend backspin, talking about what happened this past weekend in the major tours. I'm going to start talking about the European Tour. You know, in extremely testing conditions there in the final day at Royal County Down, Denmark's Søren Kjelsen birdied the first hole of a sudden-death playoff to defeat Eddie Pepperell of England and Austria's Bernd Wiesberger. Oh, Bern, what happened there? And he won the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open hosted by the Rory Foundation. You know, that was a very windy day on Sunday that yielded just four rounds under par, and Kjelsen, he struggled to 5 over 76 that day, but he was still able to come out on top. He finished regulation play tied with Wiesberger and Pepperell at 2 under par 282. Kjelsen, who entered the day with a two-shot lead, now has four career victories on the European Tour, but this is the first since the 2009 Open de Andalucía. Although he was disappointed on missing out with the victory, Pepperell could console himself with the fact that his second-place finish earned him a place in the Open in St. Andrews in July. Kjelsen and Tyrell Hatton from England took the other two places available. And like you mentioned earlier, host and world number one Rory McIlroy missed his second cut in a row. So sorry, his career is over, like you mentioned. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. On the PGA Tour, like you also mentioned, Stephen Bowditch, he carded four birdies on the back nine on Sunday and finished with a firing with a closing round of 64. He pulled away from the field on that back nine and won the Byron Nelson Championship by four strokes over Americans Charlie Hoffman, Scott Pinckney, and Jimmy Walker. It was a rain-shortened course, which due to heavy rain earlier in the week, the 14th had to be shortened from a par 4 to a par 3, which changed the course to a par 69. Bowditch had an incredible 27 birdies on his route to posting a 4-under round total of 18-under par. This was his second PGA Tour title, and like you said, both of them have come in Texas, the other being the last year's Valero Texas Open. His win vaulted him well into the top 100. He improved 62 spots from 127 to 65. Hometown favorite Jordan Spieth, he finished in a tied for 30th. So not that good of an outing for the hometown. And also on the LPGA Tour, Anna Norquist, she carded a 269 on Sunday and came from behind to win the ShopRite LPGA Classic by one. She ended her fifth LPGA Tour win with an 8-under par. This was her first victory this season, but her third since February last year. Kristen Bolgen, she closed with a 3-under to grab second place at 7-under. Morgan Presso, who led after the first two rounds, she stumbled with 2 over 73 to fall into a share of third at 5-under par. She was joined there by Kelly Shawn, last year's winner, Stacy Lewis. She managed a 1-under-70. She finished tied for 51st at 2-over-par. And Fred, last but not least, you know, it's not that I am keeping track of these things or anything else. Just happened to run by this news that on the WAMPDA.com tour. My pick from a couple of weeks ago when we recap the top 25, you know, are looking to the tour. Patton Kizzier, he lost in a playoff this weekend at the Rex Hospital tournament, but that finish vaulted him three spots into the lead of the top 25, bumping down Peter Malnati, your pick, Kelly Kraft, and Wes Roach one spot each down. All this without a win so far. Once again, Fred, let me remind you, it was just mere coincidence. I just ran by this news, okay?
Yeah, mere coincidence. But not that we're keeping track or anything.
No, not at all. It's just, whoa, look, he finished there. That does it.
I yield to the master. Hey, Carlos, you talked about the Irish Open, Royal County down. The pictures from there were outstanding. I loved looking at that. The weather, that was something else. I mean, they had wind. They had cold. They had wet. And then 5 minutes, it changed to something else. I mean, it was unbelievable. The course was nearly unplayable at times. Rory missed another cut. Shoots 80, 71, plus 9. An 80. Carlos shot an 80. He was number 101 in the field of 156 golfers. Good news is he's still number one in the OWGR, number one in the race to Dubai. So, looks like he's number one in the girlfriend category. We'll talk about that later, too. Hey, Ricky Fowler was putting together a strong final round until he finished with a double snowman, 8-8 on his final two holes, dropped him down to a T30 finish. Evidently, he was not too happy, kind of stormed out of there, wouldn't even talk to anybody. He was not in a good mood. Even though the playing conditions were difficult, they were probably perfect by Irish standards. They're used to it. It was a wee bonny day over there, evidently, or I imagine. The ShopRite, the LPGA Tour, the storylines, Nordqvist wins by two shots over French woman Christelle Bouillon, Carlos Bouillon, I believe is the correct. Morgan Pressel failed again after taking lead into the final round. That's becoming a habit with her, although she has put together a great year. I hate to knock her because she's having a really good year. She just can't seem to close the deal. Envy Park couldn't get to number one. She finished T5, remains number two behind Lydia Ko in the Rolex ranking. Another rookie, though, Kelly Shawn, had a very strong tournament. She finished tied for third. She had 70, 68, 70, finished minus 5, collected 87,000. Good tournament for her. In between rain showers, Stephen Bodich got his second win in Texas at the Byron Nelson. Started fast with 62 on Thursday and followed with rounds of 68, 64, 65 for 18 under and a four-shot win. Big news is that Jordan Spieth failed to finish runner-up. He had finished runner-up in the other three Texas tournaments this year. Even though he shot four rounds in the 60s, posted minus 7 for the week, clear down there at T30. Water everywhere. As you mentioned, the 14th was fairway was unplayable. They had turned it to a 115-yard par 3, which made the course a par 69 for the weekend. So some of the guys that were there last week at the Byron Nelson that were down here in Columbus this week, they said, man, it was just like walking in a mud puddle everywhere you went. Evidently, it was not very pleasant down there. So feel sorry for those guys. Carlos, back to you.
And that wraps up our weekend backspin. Now we're going to go to the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to start right away. And I believe you have to tell us something about Phil Mickelson and a recent visit to Chambers Bay.
Yeah, I got all kinds of Chambers Bay news for you, Carlos. Our man on the inside out there has given me great stuff. On last week's show, we talked about USGA Executive Director Mike Davis warning the tour players they would need more time to get comfortable around Chambers Bay and become more accustomed to the nuances of the green complexes. Well, it seems, you know, Davis's remarks were not too well received by the pros, but a few are beginning to get some first looks at the Tacoma, Washington golf course prior to the start of the year's second major in 2 weeks. Phil Mickelson took the opportunity on an off week last week to actually go to the course, get some practice with his short game coach, Dave Pels, and caddy, Jim McKay. Phil has six runner-up finishes in U.S. Opens and is still looking to collect his first U.S. Open trophy. It's the only major that's eluded him and would complete his career grand slam. You know he wants that in the worst way. Press was not allowed on the course when Phil was there, but he did agree to a quick couple of comments with a local TV station. Glad he spent some time there, Mickelson said. When asked about his impressions of Chamber Bay, very interesting course, he added. Finally, Mickelson was asked if anything about it surprised him. He responded by saying that Chambers Bay indeed closely resembled the type of links course found in Great Britain. There was also a sighting, a Tiger sighting, at the Gig Harbor Airport. Tiger's jet was sitting there. And we got a report from our man inside the ropes out there that he did indeed play yesterday. He teed off about 8:30 a.m. There were four or five people with him. Nobody else was out on the course while he was there. He took quite a bit of time to study green complexes and wasn't concerned about putting out to the hole locations they had there. He was just checking things over a little bit. He evidently stayed over in Tacoma or Seattle last night and then played the course again today. He was the only one out playing from what it looked. He was there by himself. Kind of watched him go about his business on a couple of holes. Put a lot of work around the greens, putts, bunker shots, rolling balls off slopes, etc. And the report went on to add that the Woods looked very businesslike and seemed to be in very good health. If he shows reasonable control and consistency off the tee and signs of sharpening short game at the Memorial, he would maybe consider him a serious threat at Chambers Bay. So, as you can see, there are some people starting to take a look out there. Chambers Bay, as you know, first opened for play in June of 2007, just 8 years ago, Carlos. Really unusual that a course that new gets a U.S. Open. That's really unusual. It was built and designed by Robert Trent Jones, can be stretched over 7,800 yards. It will not play that long for the U.S. Open, but will play as a 36-35 par 71. There's only one par 5 on the inward 9, number 18, and it can be stretched over 600 yards. The 2010 U.S. Amateur was held there and won by Peter Uihlein. Jordan Spieth's caddy, Mike Grillo, has the most knowledge of Chambers Bay as he's from the area and previously caddied at the course prior to signing on with Spieth. You know, and a side note here, you know, we've heard a lot of grumbling from the players and grouching about Chambers Bay, you know, maybe premature, but, you know, Jack Nicklaus always said when he heard someone complaining about a course, he knew it was one less person he had to beat that week. Well, Phil and Tiger are not grumbling. They know the U.S. Open is as much about mental attitude as it is about the quality of their swing. They will be prepared.
That is right, and I love that saying. At least now you know that Tiger and Phil will be ready. Hey, Fred. Boston 2024 was dealt a low blow to its bid to potentially land the Summer Olympic Games last Thursday night. The Boston Globe's Ellen Ishkanian and Mark Arsenault report that Brookline, the community home to the country club, presumed 2022 U.S. Open side pending community negotiations with the USGA, voted Thursday night to oppose the 2024 Olympic bid of the Boston and the USOC's nominee. Voters in Brookline, Massachusetts, passed a non-binding resolution against Boston's 2024 Olympic bid by an overwhelming 111-46 tally. Just seven voters abstained. Residents and town officials gathered at the Brookline High School auditorium to vote on a resolution that would oppose bringing the 2024 Olympics to Boston. Eight speakers signed up, and they were allotted 12 minutes each to voice their opposition. Town meeting members argued that Brookline was never consulted about hosting the 2024 Olympics before the Boston 2024 group submitted its bid to the United States Olympic Committee last year. Chris Dempsey, co-chair of the group No Boston Olympics, spoke in front of the group. He laid out 10 points as to why Brookline should oppose Boston 2024.
Boston 2024 has proposed that Olympic golf be played at the country club in Brookline, the oldest country club in the United States. It hosted the Ryder Cup in 1999. The city could also be used as part of the Olympic marathon route. Wyszynski and fellow selectmen worry taxpayers could be saddled with the cost and wonders how they would handle traffic and public transit. Manny Mancio, a 1992 Olympic rower, thinks the concerns of town leaders are legitimate. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker is pressuring Boston 2024 to release an updated plan, and that plan is scheduled to be released this month. Fred, I believe that plan would be reading, you know, you can either take golf out of the Olympics at all, but we're going to go for it, or we'll build another golf course anywhere else.
Well, I would think there'd be other golf courses in the Boston area that they could use for that. So if they really want to do that, I would think there'd be something they could use there. But yeah.
If not, it will be out. Don't worry. They won't lose
yeah.
it because of that.
No. Hey, Jack Nicklaus, you know, was honored by the USGA last week with his own gallery at the Far Hills, New Jersey USGA headquarters. When asked when he was there if he could have won more major championships, he said he could have won as many as 25 majors if he had sacrificed something near and dear, his close relationship with his family. Jack went on to add that he never thought about his legacy while he was on the tour. The first time I ever really thought about major championships was 1970 at St. Andrews. I walked into the press room and Bob Green was the AP reporter and he said, "Hey, Jack, that's 10 majors now, only three more to tie Bobby Jones." You know, that had never entered my mind. I mean, Tiger has had it on his wall from the time he was 5 years old. It never entered my mind. I was interested in just doing my best. I didn't worry too much about my legacy. If I worried about my legacy, I think I probably would have prepared myself better and won 25 major championships. I'm being facetious. Could I have won more? Yes. Could I have prepared better? Yes. Would I have known my family the way I know them? Probably not. Would I trade what I have with my family and my kids for another two major championships? Absolutely not. Jack also went on to say that the importance of my legacy is not on the golf course. It's what my life has been. Nicklaus said, "Golf was a game. My family was my life. I always treated golf as a game, never anything else. To have a family that's close is really special." You know, also last week, Nicklaus stopped by Donald Trump's newest golf property, Ferry's Point, in the Bronx, New York, for its official opening. Nicklaus had first floated the idea of a city-owned golf course on the property to Mayor Giuliani and then to Michael Bloomberg. When the project seemed to stall, Jack gave credit to Donald Trump for coming to its rescue. Trump, said Nicklaus, took this to the finish line after the project stalled. Trump had said, "We got involved. Everyone said it could be great, but it wasn't going to happen. It was going to be many, many years. Most importantly, it's a great course. Everyone knows that Jack is the greatest golfer who ever lived. We all know he was the greatest golfer ever. I think he's so proud of this as a golf course architect. This work is a testament." The course will play to 7,500 yards from the tips. He's already secured a PGA Championship at Trump Bedmaster, New Jersey. He'll be working hard to land a major for this golf course also. Nicklaus said, "It's going to stand the test of time. You're going to have some great events here, whether it's a U.S. Open or a PGA Championship. You're going to have a lot of events through time. Donald and I will be in a wheelchair, but that's all right. We're going to look down at it and say we had a part in that. Proud of it, and we did something that is going to be enjoyed by the people for a very, very long time." The course is a little bit controversial in the Bronx. Donald's deal with the city, he gets it 20%. Even though it's a public golf course, he gets it 20% of the time. It closes down. It becomes his personal little deal. It's the highest fee-based public muni golf course in the United States. It's $169 around for New York residents. More than that if you're from out of state. Kids can get on for $54. I wonder if I can qualify for the kids rate. it must be quite a deal. Anything that Donald's involved in always has a little bit of controversy with it, but it's always first class, and evidently this is also, Carlos.
Well, when do you think it's not going to be about money with Donald Trump?
Never.
Hey, some bad news here. You know, Golf Channel laid off about 30 employees, or 3% of its workforce, last Friday. Most of those layoffs came in Golf Channel's original production division and related positions. The cutbacks indicate a reduction in costly programming that has a limited shelf life or use on the channel's website. A spokesman said Golf Channel has realigned some business functions to add emphasis on live events, news, and digital businesses. As a result, some positions primarily working on tape programming with limited digital focus have been impacted. You know, Golf Channel, which is based in Orlando, Florida, and owned by NBC Universal, recently has been trying to rationalize the cost of some of its original programming. The spokesman said the channel will continue to produce its variety talk show and larger documentaries, such as the three-part series it did on Arnold Palmer and documentary it produced on Payne Stewart, tied to the U.S. Open returning to Pinehurst last year. Big Break, the long-running popular reality show that just completed its 23rd cycle, is on hold as Golf Channel searches for a viable production and sponsorship model and cancels other programs such as In Play with Jimmy Roberts. Altered Course, which is a new reality show that debuts June 15, will air as planned, but going forward, the spokesman suggested it also will undergo the same cost rationalizations. That spokesman noted that Golf Channel added more than 150 positions last year, mostly at its headquarters in Orlando, bringing the company total headcount to nearly 1,000 employees. The spokesman said more hirings are anticipated, but those jobs will be directed toward live golf, news, and digital platforms. Starting last week, the NCAA Women's Golf Championships, Golf Channel is in the midst of 25 consecutive days of live golf, and the network has seen viewership records due to the live action, which usually takes place between Thursdays and Sundays. Golf Channel is increasingly focused on live events and programming that has a long shelf life and can be rebroadcast in the U.S. and internationally or repackaged for digital platforms. A spokesman said no on-air talent was affected by the cutbacks. So in a sense, it's sad, but if you see they're shifting the focus towards what really, really is growing right now, which is live media, digital business, digital platforms. So definitely it's a good move, in my opinion, towards what is being the new thing right now on TV. So sad to see those people go, but, you know, as they said, there are new people that are being hired as well, but it's just a refocus that they're doing, Fred.
Yeah, Golf Channel's had a phenomenal growth over the 20 years that they've been around, and so, you know, there's going to be some changes. And of course, now with NBC buying them a couple years ago, they're going to have some different ideas. And you know, you get the corporate bean counters in there, and it's a little different deal than when Arnold was there looking over the shoulder. So yeah, those kind of things are going to happen. Carlos, I don't know. I know you're a busy guy, and you've got some kids. But do you and your wife ever go out and play golf on a Sunday afternoon?
Unfortunately, she doesn't play.
Well, see, there you go. Can you imagine playing a nice afternoon round of golf with your spouse, and when you make a hole in one, and then your wife says you're not going to seem so big when I hold this shot on top of you? Can you imagine that? Well, actually, it happened. It actually happened. Can you imagine? To Tony and Janet Blundy last week, a golfing couple from Lansing, Michigan. And before you ask, yes, there were independent witnesses who verified that it really happened. You know, they've been laughing about it every time they think about it. It's so unbelievable that it could happen. According to research done by Contest Insurer National Hole-in-One Association, in 2013, the odds of an amateur golfer getting a hole-in-one are 12,500 to 1. For two amateurs, each making a hole-in-one on the same round as a foursome, the odds climb to 1.3 million to 1. For two members of a foursome to ace the same hole in the same round, they skyrocket to 26 million to one. Unbelievable numbers. It's just off the charts. But in a twosome on consecutive shots, it's just, it's, you know, it's incalculable. Can't figure it out. You know, I had a feeling, but, you know, everybody gets a feeling that this one's going in, Janet Blundy said about her second career ace. We have a competitive edge between us. It was just like, you're not going to get this one up on me. They were both just awesome. It was out of this world, out of control. It was like, oh, my God, I can't believe that just happened. The Blundys usually golf at least 18 holes a week together and have for the past 10 years. At the 16th hole, their seventh of the round, 53-year-old Tony went first and one-hopped his 7-iron into the cup from 135 yards. It was the first of his golfing career. The Blundys' hoots and hollers startled the golfers in front of them and on the neighboring fairway. You're going to, and then Janet tells her husband, you're going to be really mad at me when I put mine in, she told her husband. Her joke became an even more raucous reality when Janet planted her pitching wedge tee shot about 6 feet in front of the pin, and it rolled into the same hole from 110 yards away. Because they caused such a commotion, two strangers had come over as their witnesses, and so it just, you know, just an amazing thing. I don't know. They by the time they got their round done, nobody was left in the clubhouse to buy drinks for. But that could have been they would have had to take a loan not to buy for everybody with two holes in one. So, unbelievable day for them. A lot of fun.
I couldn't imagine. Well, maybe on a dream I would do that, but never would happen. Anyway, hey, you know what, Colin Montgomery. Let me tell you something.
Colin Monty.
Huh? Hey, Kieran, Monty, listen to this. I know you know it, but anyway. The magic of playing in an open championship at St. Andrews has enticed Colin Montgomery to plan a 5,500-mile mad dash from L.A. to London in a bid to make it an eight-some reel for the Scott in golf majors this year. The 51-year-old is in the middle of a run of five consecutive major appearances and has two more after that, including a freshly secured spot in the U.S. PGA Championship at Whistling Straits after his successful defense of the senior equivalent in Indiana. The only missing piece in the remaining 2015 major jigsaw, in fact, is the Open Championship, and Monty is ready to fight jet lag in one of the four final qualifying events at Woburn on June 30th in a determined bid to play in that as well, having finished second to Tiger Woods on the old course in 2005. He said, and I quote, with the Senior Open and now the USPGA to come later in the season, I already know I'll be playing in seven majors this year, and if I could qualify for the Open at St. Andrews, that would make it eight, which has got to be a record. Yes, Monty, it would be a record. It would be a record if you make it, at least to Woburn. I don't know how you're going to do it. But anyway, the last time the eight times European number one attempted to squeeze into the Claret Joust through the same route was 2 years ago at Glen, where he is returning in July to join the star-studded cast for the Aberdeen Asset Management Scottish Open. Montgomery has now three over 50 majors to his name and fired back at the cynics who claim after his latest victory that while he was trumpeting such victories, Jack Nicklaus, the game's greatest player, probably wouldn't know how many senior titles he has won. Montgomery's victory at French Lake helped ease the pain of losing his European Tour hole-in-one record to Miguel Angel Jimenez after golf's most interesting man made the 10 A's of his career.
Poor Monty. He just gets no respect.
Yeah, man, it's incredible. You know, it helped him in as a senior himself these days, but still going strong on the main circuit to be joint runner-up at the BMW PGA Championship, Fred.
Well, you know, it would be quite a thing to play in eight major championships, four on the senior tour and four on the regular tour in a year. That really would be an accomplishment, I have to admit. But Monty might be making a little bit much of his because he's winning some majors on the senior tour. He's, you know, kind of trumping those up maybe a little.
He's over his head now.
Exactly.
He's over his head. Oh, I can do it.
Hey, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows you to sell new or used equipment online. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
United Golf Network, remember, it was created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our VIGs of the week.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VAGs. We have two of them for you. The first one is Dan Sullivan. He's the president of H&S Sports Group and executive director of the Memorial Tournament. And Fred was with him and got the interview for us. Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview.
Yeah, Dan Sullivan has been the executive director for the Memorial Tournament for a long time. He's been involved with the tournament for about 25 years. He works very closely with Jack Nicklaus on putting the tournament on and making sure that he and his Dan and his staff make sure that everything goes according to plan and gets done the way that that Mr. Nicklaus wants it done. So, and he just does a fantastic job. He's a great guy, and we had the chance to talk to him today, and so we taped this piece with him. So go ahead and play that, Carlos.
Okay, let's play the interview. We are happy to be talking to Dan Sullivan, who's the executive director for the Memorial Tournament here in Columbus, Ohio. And Dan, this is the 40th year for the tournament. Seems like it's gone pretty fast, doesn't it?
It sure has. I've been here for about 25 of them. You think back to 1976 and what Jack created. It's amazing how the tournament's evolved over time. And as we look at the 40 years, I think it's accomplished the original goal that Jack had and maybe plus some.
Speaking of those goals, there are kind of threefold. You want to honor individuals who have distinguished themselves in golf, showcase the world's best golfers, and benefit the greater Columbus charities. And I think you pretty much cover all three of those bases.
Yeah, we have. When it comes to honoring, you know, we have Sir Nick Faldo this year as the honoree. And over the course of the history of 40 years, we've honored the greats of the game for sure. And then the players always come to this golf tournament. And the reasons that they do, it's Jack, it's the golf course and how it sets up for them and how quality of a golf course it is. It's our fans that come out in droves. And then the giving back is a part of, integrated as part of the golf, professional golf for sure. And our relationship with Nationwide Children's Hospital has been incredible over the years. They provide us thousands of volunteers, and we recognize them in providing awareness and funds back to the hospital. And we support a lot of other charities in town too. So this year, we expect to get over 1.8 or 1.9 million to charities, and we're really proud of what we've done with that.
And that just adds to the 25 million that has been totaled over the over the 40 years.
Yeah, it really has, and our goal is to keep on growing it. So one of the primary focuses is to ensure that what we're doing with the hospital keeps on growing, and how we expand into the community and help other charities out. It's truly ingrained in the PGA Tour and what they do on a week-to-week basis, and we have to pull our weight on it and make sure that we're providing that same benefit back to Columbus charities.
Yeah, I know, and you mentioned the field. You always have strong fields here. We know that Rory McIlroy is not here this year due to commitments he had leading up to this and then with the U.S. Open coming in 2 weeks. Yeah. But strong field is always big names. Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Tiger and Phil are both here.
What I like about it is you've got the established guys like Tiger and Phil and Steve Stricker and Ernie Els and Vijay. And Jim Furyk, and then you've got the young guys who have played extremely well over the last year. So whether it's Jordan Hideki, our winner, or Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, we have a nice combination of the young stars and the established stars. And between the two of them, between the two categories, fans can come out here and see every different possible star that you can on the PGA Tour. And that's a testament to our tournament and attracting the players, but it's also a testament to the tour, that they've created new stars, young stars that people really want to see. And so I expect over the 3 or 4 days that we're out here competing that it's that we're going to see a nice combination of the established and the young going at each other.
You mentioned the fans, and this tournament, from the get-go, when he developed the golf course, it had the fan in mind with the mounding and the natural stadium effect that he has on nearly every hole. And the fans, it's a total fan experience. It's just not watching golf. There's a lot of stuff going on around the tournament.
Yeah, that's right. And Jack is a visionary in that regard. Maybe the stadium course and the TPC gets a little more recognition for being a stadium-type venue because that's what it's called. But truly, when Jack built this in 74, it was groundbreaking when it comes to how you design a golf course for not only the players on a day-to-day throughout the year, but also the spectators when you have a PGA Tour event or any other event. So the advantages that our spectators get throughout this golf course are consistent and equal on every hole. You get a chance to be above the hole, get to see down, and get to see both the tee and the green in a way that you don't necessarily see in other golf courses. So we're really proud of that. And the way the fans react to it has been tremendous. They go to 14th and 12th and 15th and really get into the action over those 4 days.
Yeah, Jack and built the course. He envisioned the tournament as an annual event that embraces history and tradition, and everything always seems to be done in a first-class manner, and I know that's one of your mandates.
Yeah, absolutely. It's his expectation. It's Barber's expectation. He takes it from a player's perspective. He wants to make sure that we're thinking on behalf of the player as well as the fans and the volunteers. But when we're focused on providing kind of service and value to the player, we take care of the general stuff very well. I mean, we just make sure that we understand when they're coming in. We give a nice courtesy car. They have a great opportunity to work out and to eat and to kind of take their time away from the crowds when they need. And then when they're on the golf course, it's very much about the competition. I always say inside the ropes. It's truly clean and not chaotic, and that's what Jack wants. You'll see other tournaments where there may be a little bit of chaos going on inside the ropes, and we just don't allow that to happen here. And out of respect for the game and out of respect to what Jack's expectations are related to the competition.
Yeah, let's talk about that just for a little bit. I know a couple of years ago there was a problem. Phil Mickelson didn't like some of the cell phone activity that was going on. I know it's been an issue at other PGA events around, and LPGA and all the pro tournaments. You actually have a cell phone safe zone here. Is that correct?
We do. And over time what's happened is I think we've learned a lot. We, the organizers of golf tournaments, not only here at the Memorial but across the PGA Tour and other professional events. And then the spectators have learned a lot. And I think we've all kind of come together and realized that it's a great convenience to have a cell phone with you and that there is a matter of respect that we need to provide to the players. And so we always say when you're walking around the rope line, when you're in the field of competition and you're watching, just keep your phone on silent. And then when you want to use it, we have designated spaces throughout the golf course, whether it's a concession area or a cell phone area that you're able to get away, separate yourself from the competition, and use the phone. One of the things we're always after is that when it's so easy to take a picture with your phone when you're out on the golf course. And Thursday through Sunday, we just don't allow that. So that's the one tolerance thing that we're continuing to work on to educate, that we're not on the golf course watching play. During actual competition Thursday through Sunday, so phones aren't permitted, not only to use but also to use as a camera. So I think it's an education process. We've gotten a lot better since our first year, and I think the spectators have become more used to it as well.
Just real quick before we let you get away, condition of the golf course. We've had a fair amount of rain here in the central Ohio area, but it's a little cool here today. Chance of some possible thunderstorms passing through, but for the most part, weather looks pretty good going forward to the weekend.
Yeah, we feel really good about it. The rain came. The great news about this golf course is Paul Latcha, who's the superintendent, and his staff have created an incredible golf course that drains really well. And that's been a lot of work. They call it drain tile that they put in the fairways and the greens and making sure that you're able to get rid of the water quicker. And he's been successful in doing that. So even though we got a bunch of rain, it kind of moved out quickly. And the golf course is really firm and fast, and it should be throughout the rest of the week. And you're right. I think our forecast looks pretty good. So we're really excited about it.
Fantastic. Well, we're looking forward to another great week here at the Memorial. And, Dan, thanks so much for the efforts that you and your team do down here. We always feel fortunate and treated very well.
Thanks, Fred. And we really appreciate everyone from Toledo who comes down. We have a big fan base up there that comes down every year to be a part of this event. And we really appreciate everyone in Toledo coming down.
There you have it. That was the interview with Dan Sullivan, the president of H&S Sports Group, which he founded in the year 2000, with former Memorial Tournament Director Jim Hines and Steve Nicholas, the second oldest son of Jack Nicholas. And like we have mentioned, he's also overseen as the executive director the Memorial Tournament. Fred, he's a guy that's been around the Central Ohio golf scene for a while, you know, dating back to the internship he had in the 1987 Ryder Cup, and like he mentioned, starting in the 1990s as a director of marketing for the Memorial. So, pretty respectable guy there.
Yeah, he also was in charge of the tournament for the President's Cup, worked with the PGA for that, and that was massive. I mean, the Memorial is a big deal. But the President's Cup was like 10 times the size of the Memorial. I mean, it was unbelievable. Just did a fantastic job with that. The group also works with the Web.com Tour when they come to town for the Nationwide Children's Hospitals Championship later in the summer, one of the Web.com Final Series events. And so they're a busy group, and they do a great job, and really can't say enough about them. They have always made me feel very comfortable there, and anything that I need, any questions I have, they take care of it like immediately. So Dan Sullivan has a great team, and they do a fantastic job putting on the Memorial, but that all comes right from the top and what is expected by Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas.
And mentioning that, in March, the PGA Tour and H&S Sports Group won an XP Award from Experience Columbus for the President's Cup. So there you have it. That's how good their work was in that one. Well, our next VIG, very important guest of the week, is none other than Sean Foley, you know, the Canadian golf instructor who has coached Sean O'Hare, Stephen Ames, and Parker McLachlan, as well as other PGA Tour professionals, like very notably Tiger Woods for 4 years. And he has coached also Justin Rose since the end of 2009 and also has in his table right now Hunter Mahan, and added very recently Matt Every. So how about this interview with Sean Foley, Fred?
Yeah, I've watched, you know, since Sean was with Tiger, and even before when he was working with Justin and Hunter Mahan, and I was very taken by what he had those players doing. Because, as I mentioned to you earlier, I have for a long time used a lot of the things that he does in when I'm working with students. And so I've been very curious and followed him very closely for several years now. And always wanted to get a chance to talk to him. It just never worked out. And today he was working with Justin Rose on the range for a while. And so I was standing there and watching them for some time, what they were doing. And when they wrapped up, I asked Sean if he could take a minute or two to talk to me, and he obliged. So it was great to get a chance to talk to him. Really a bright guy. Really, really a bright guy.
Let's play it.
We're at the driving range of Muirfield Village for the Memorial Tournament. We're talking to Sean Foley. And Sean, you just came up and been working with Justin Rose. What are you working with Justin on this week?
Oh, well, we have a blueprint. I mean, this is my seventh year working with Justin. So I'd say what we built that we try to keep constant did that in the first year. So basically good setup. Alignment slightly right is where he plays his best from. And then just making sure that, you know, like I said, we don't really work that much anymore on anything except for those points. And then we do some troubleshooting if we need to. But in Justin's case, if his body's moving well, he swings the club very well. So it's almost more testament to what he, at this point, is how he works off the road and making sure that he gets rest and that he works out and that he stretches and does all those things.
Well, it's obviously been working pretty well. He's had a couple really good years here heading into the U.S. Open. Have you been out to Chambers Bay, spent any time out there?
No, I haven't been out there. I won't, probably until the Sunday event.
Yeah, mixed reports coming back from there. But who else? Who are they here seeing this week? Just Justin or anyone else?
I also have Matt Every. I started working with Matt about 4 months ago. So we played this morning with Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. So I broke them up to Matt in the morning, Justin in the afternoon. Hunter has the week off.
Cool. What? Now you're here this week, or are you, you going to Memphis next week, or just going out to Washington?
Yeah, I would just no Memphis, and then out to Nike headquarters for a couple days, and then from there straight up to Chambers Bay.
From your walk on the course this morning, anything you picked up? What does the course look like?
It's playing super long. Yeah, it's a bit wet out, and then there's some new tees out there, so it played in the wind. It played quite long.
Cool. Well, listen, thanks for taking time to talk to us, and good luck this week.
All right, thanks so much.
There you have it. That was Sean Foley, and he was working with Justin Rose, who he's been working for 7 years, and since 2009, to be exact. So, Fred, anything you want to tell us about this interview before we go to the practice range?
Yeah, you know, whenever you see Sean in an interview, he's always seemed kind of buttoned up and, you know, pretty guarded. But I have to tell you, I watched him for about 40 minutes today, actually. And he was really outgoing and really gregarious, even, I would say, with all the caddies and the players that would walk by. You'd have a comment for him. They'd have a laugh about something. He just was having a good time being out there among the players and the caddies on the range, working with Justin. And there was a tailor-made equipment guy there working on some wedge stuff for Justin at the same time where they were doing their other stuff. And it was just a lot of fun to watch him interact with all these other guys. So, he is really a lot more outgoing than what he comes across when you see him on TV.
Well, that's really something very interesting, because when you see him on TV or any images, pictures, and all that, he really sounds or looks like somebody that you can't approach. So it's great that you notice it and tell us that. So, well, that wraps up our very important guest of the week segment, Sean Foley and Dan Sullivan. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to have our practice range, and we're going to talk about the state of the game of Rory McIlroy and the other top players in the world in the run-up to the U.S. Open. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, take our shots at it, and that's why we call it the practice range. This week, we're going to be talking about the state of the game of Rory McIlroy and the other top players in the world. Who's hot, who's not, in the run-up to the U.S. Open, which is just 2 weeks away. You know, on Friday, at one of the most beautiful golf courses you'll ever see, the most talented golfer on the planet was brought to his knees. We're talking about Rory McIlroy, the world's number one, the face of the Dubai Duty-Free Irish Open, presented by the Rory Foundation, in more ways than one. He opened up his bid for a first ever win at this event close to his home and his heart with a head-scratching 80, making 9 bogeys and 0 birdies and putting the world's number one in a position that almost certainly meant a weekend would be missed at Royal County Down. And the questions immediately began. What happened? What's wrong with Rory? Even you, Fred, you said 80? What? How can the best player in the world shoot 80? I mean, I can't even do that in my best day. But anyway, and a miscut in Europe for a second straight weekend after the way he just played at the World Golf Championship Cadillac Match Play and the World's Fargo. You know, to all those questions, one answer sits clearly on top. Hey, golf happened. For anyone who has ever picked up a club with a handicap that has a plus sign in front or one that reads more like a speed sign limit like mine, you know, rounds like this happen, especially when weather is involved. We all know this. And he's still the number one, and he still stole the show. You know why? Because on Sunday, he unveiled his new girlfriend, Erica Staal. He showed up at the final round there for the Irish Open, and nobody cared who was playing. They were watching who is with Rory. So that's what happens. You know, Rory unveiled the number one girlfriend in golf, and that's Erica Staal. You know, Rory, what to make up of this, his state of the game, 2 miscuts there. I think, you know, it was part of that traveling, going to Europe, those 2 starts, miscuts. Well, like I said, something happens. But that 2 wins at the WGC and the Wells Fargo and the T8 and the Players, 4th at the Masters, hey, you can't discount him when he comes back for the U.S. Open. So, Fred, how about Rory McIlroy before we talk about the other players in the world?
Well, you know, yeah, he missed his 2nd cut in a row. And, you know, for a world number one to do that, you know, that's probably not a good thing. You know, we've kind of seen this before from Rory. He's inconsistent. You know, he has some success, and he kind of loses focus for a time. You know, he really did play poorly at Royal County Down. I mean, I watched some of the round on Thursday, and it was ugly. I mean, it was ugly golf, I have to say. I don't know, I think the girlfriend's been around for a while, so it's not like she's new or anything. Maybe it's the fact of making it public. I don't know. You know, and she actually works for the PGA of America. He's been spending a lot of time in South Florida, where he has a place down there, and that's where, you know, PGA is headquartered down there also. So, I don't know. Just, you know, it's inexplainable, really, why Rory shot those kind of scores. But, you know, with him, it all revolves around driving, and he was just driving the ball very poorly. His swing just was not there. But like I say, we've seen this from Rory before. He could come out here in 2 weeks and be striping it out there at Chambers Bay and tear the place up. So when he's on, there's nobody right now that's any better than him, that's for sure. When he's off, he can be horrid. You know, Phil Mickelson has been like that his whole career. When he's good, he's really, really good. And when he's bad, he looks pretty bad at times. So, and I think this is what we're going to see with Rory throughout his career. Maybe as he gets older, he will mature just a little bit more and be able to turn the focus on and off a little bit. Right now, he doesn't seem to be able to do that. He can really focus for short stretches at a time, you know, like a month or so. But then it's like, okay, I got to hit the release valve and I got to go off and do something else for a while and just get away from this. But yeah, I'm not going to read too much into it, Carlos. He's still the best player going right now. And we've seen this before, so not expecting too much to change. You know, in a couple months, he'll go on a streak again and win 2 or 3 or 4 out of 6 weeks or something, you know. So that's what we come to expect from him.
And like you mentioned, there's a point, like you mentioned, that he looked sometimes like Phil Mickelson. That was the point I talked about this week, and we learned maybe that he's more like Phil Mickelson than Tiger Woods. Because when he's good, like you just mentioned, he's really, really good. When he's not, well, he's really awful. But talking about Phil Mickelson, he's really on a very good streak, I would say, going there, even though he had a miscut at the Players. You know, he had a T8 T4 second at the Masters, T4th at the Wells Fargo. He's going to be active this week in the U.S. Open. You know how he plays. He's going to be definitely, he's on the up. Tiger Woods, well, we don't know, a T69 at the Players, but he showed up at the Masters with a T17. We don't know what to make up of him so far, so we can, at least I don't know where to place him, if he's hot or not. But when I look at through the rankings of the official world rankings, Jordan Spieth second, Bubba Watson, Henrik Stenson, Jim Furyk, Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, and Jason Day, those are the top 10. I would say that even though, of all those, I would say that Dustin Johnson has been the most consistency or the most of those top 10s that have been growing through the year. You know, he started 19th at the top of the year. He's 8 right now. And Jimmy Walker is one that has been going up in the rankings. He's all the way up to 11. He's going very well. J.B. Holmes, what a year he's having. He's all the way to 13. Those players are playing great. And, hey, you know who's playing hot right now also? Golf's most interesting man, Miguel Angel Jimenez. You know what he's done lately? He's been tied for second at the Open de España. Tied for second.
He keeps making holes in ones. That's what he's done.
Yeah,
lately.
You know, if he does that at the U.S. Open, who knows? We'll be seeing cigars and all that. But those are players that are going forward. What do you think about the other players going into the U.S. Open?
Well, to talk about Tiger and Phil for a second, I think Chambers Bay is going to be a golf course that lends itself well to the guys with really good short games around the greens. And, you know, there are some guys who have good short games, better than others, and Phil Mickelson is one of those guys. I wouldn't be surprised to see Phil near the top of the leaderboard. And he really, really, really wants a U.S. Open to complete that career Grand Slam. For him to finish out a career Grand Slam in the Tiger area, that would be big. That will move him up to another level, put him up there, you know, with the Hogans and, you know, some of these other people, where right now he's a little bit below that. So this is really important for Phil, and his time is starting to grow short. So this may be a really good chance for him. To talk a little bit about Tiger, the long game is still the issue with Tiger. There is some room at Chambers Bay to miss the ball a little bit, but there is also some problems that you want to be avoided with the long game. So if he gets himself into some of those places where you just can't get yourself out of, it doesn't matter how good he is from 150 yards in. Tiger's always had a very good short game. He had some problems early in the year with some chipping, but he's taken care of that. He's back on track with that. So, you know, at one time he had the best short game in the world for a long time. And that needs to be on display at Chambers Bay for him to do any good. In addition to that, he has to look better off the tee than he's been looking for him to be any kind of a factor at all. And that's what I'm watching this week, Carlos, is what kind of long game he has at the Memorial this week. Is he going to be hitting in the trees, or is he going to keep it near the fairway where he's got a shot? Some of the other players, you mentioned the guys that are hot right now, the top 10 in the world. And of those, you know, I look at Rory, I look at Jordan Spieth. Chambers Bay could be a good course for Jim Furyk. He's one of those guys with a dynamite short game. Zach Johnson has a dynamite short game. Those are the guys. Ricky Fowler does so well in Europe on these link-style golf courses. Maybe Chambers Bay is another place for him. I just don't see Dustin Johnson playing that well at Chambers Bay. I just don't think the course fits his game that well. Sergio, he's a European guy. It's a link-style golf course. And I was going to make a point that, you know, the European guys may have a little bit of an edge there because nobody really knows the course that well, but it is a lot like what they grew up on. So guys like Justin Rose, maybe Luke Donald, some of these guys maybe have a better chance at winning a U.S. Open on a Chambers Bay than maybe some other courses. So one guy I haven't talked about, Jason Day. I like Jason Day a lot. I'm not sure his short game is that great yet either, but he's certainly a factor. He's played well in the majors. And the other guy, there's two other guys, Brant Snedeker and Patrick Reed. We haven't heard much about Reed lately. He played really good early in the year, but he's due to jump up in one of these majors and really have a good one. And Brant Snedeker has been playing awfully well. He's been playing very consistent, like we are used, accustomed to seeing from Brant Snedeker. So I look for him. He has that great short game. So he could be a guy that could be a factor out there at Chambers Bay also. I guess that's the things I want to say about that, Carlos.
Well, we'll see. The U.S. Open is in 2 weeks. We're going to have a very wall-to-wall preview, as we do with all major tournaments in those 2 weeks. So be aware of that. That wraps up our practice range for this week. We have some final putts before we leave. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about your stories today for the final putt.
Just a couple things here real quick. Anthony Kim auctioned off a round. You know, he's got that insurance policy, so he can't play professional golf, but he auctioned off a round for charity, and he collected $25,000 for the charity for someone to play golf with him. Gerald Lyle has announced he's going to take the rest of the year off. He's found that he's just not quite back from the leukemia, the second go-round with that yet. He needs to take a little time off, rest, get a little bit stronger, and give it a go again next year. That's the main things I want to talk about. I got a bunch of other stuff, but it'll wait for another day.
Yeah, I just want to finish with, you know, some Arnold Palmer and the Golf Coaches Association of America. They announced that the Arnold Palmer Cup, a Ryder Cup-style competition since 1997, has been the matching top college male players in the United States against their counterparts in Europe. It will now expand to include men and women from around the world in 2018. The key points would be that each team will consist of 12 men, 12 women. The first 7 men's and women's golfers from each side will be determined via the Arnold Palmer rankings. Men and women will contribute each one team score, and it will keep its match play format, but will add a mixed team session. So great to see that, you know, the Palmer Cup is going co-ed. Hey, that Mac Diners, that wraps up another week of the Backman Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIGs of the week, Dan Sullivan and John Foley. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alfader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.